Yo creo. Okay, hi friends, and welcome to what looks like our 105th program here on the science triangles. And I have a mixture, of course, of what Starling Hunter has sent as important articles and trying to track them down in the book as well. Nice to see you here. Probably some of you are here for the for Tuya's presentation on the Sacred Pentagram, number one. Well, she'll be continuing those, and I think tomorrow, is it tomorrow? I have also a pre-full moon. Hopefully at a reasonable hour, I'll have to check that, and you check as well your schedules. So I want to thank Michael and BL for their hosting and co-hosting, and helping to make sure that my frequent technical mistakes are minimal, if possible, and glad to welcome Anne from Sweden and Anne Veronica from Greece, and Anna Sklar, welcome, and Anne Parr, welcome from Los Angeles, and Annette from New Zealand, and Astra, welcome, Anna, and Frederick from, at the moment, from Japan, and Georgina Sprague, welcome, and Maria Christina from Tucson, Arizona, and Mariana Larson, Sweden, and Nienke, it sounds like Holland, or one of those, the so-called low countries. And Risto, hi Risto, from Finland. We do have occasional people from Finland, and Tia from Washington. And Tuya is here too, somewhere up there, I think. And Vivian, hi. And Yvonne, hi. Yvonne Wegener, Pittsburgh. And Ivanka, Calixte, welcome. Ivanka and Zenaide from living in Switzerland, and NASA, also hi NASA. Well, welcome to all of you as we attempt to fathom a bit more concerning the science of triangles. We have reached, as I say, program 105. Let's see what our very first first subject may be, and then perhaps I can turn to the correct page. It says here, significant to the fourth creative hierarchy. Now, it's the Leo Virgo Pisces triangle. It's on Esoteric Astrology 289. It's preceded by another related triangle. The Leo Virgo Pisces is connected to the seeding triangle, we'll see what it is in a minute, but produces a still more subtle expression of consciousness. I think the thing we have to remember is that when you become a master, which we all will if we stay with it here, when you become a master as a world server in Aquarius, there is another way which is more arduous and more related to Shambhala, and it is to take the path of the world saviors, which Pisces confers on those who tread that path.
Michael,
now,
one question I have for you is your internet, is there a message coming up on your end that your internet is unstable? Any chance?
No.
Do you have a lot of programs running in the background?
Well, I can get rid of telepathy and I can.
It's coming in.
Failed to sign in.
It's kind of coming in.
Garbled.
Yeah, just like your internet's breaking up is what it sounds like, but it could be processor is overloaded.
And we just lost your text.
I'm kind of trying to get rid of stuff. You know, I'm trying to get rid of stuff that Michael says may be causing a problem because we've had this happen before. I don't want it to happen again, obviously. So my sharing is pause. I can resume sharing. Now, do you see my triple yellow? I hope you do. And
not yet.
Let's see.
Now we do.
Text. I'm sorry. Takes a little while before it comes up. Well, here is the triangle that is before the triangle being discussed. And let's think about this on page 290. It says, in the relationship of Taurus, Leo, and Aquarius, you have a significant and important zodiacal triangle as far as man is concerned. And it is peculiarly significant to the fourth creative hierarchy. Now, why would that be? It's going to tell us a little bit about that triangle and maybe following that triangle. I have to kind of go back and forth between what Starling has sent out and what is written here in the books, because he sometimes just indicates what can be looked at, and we have to look at the books.
Michael.
So, Taurus, yes.
Sorry, you're yes? Still breaking up.
Yeah. Can we test one other thing? Can you just shut your video off?
What? Okay.
Turn your camera off and see if the voice is clear.
Okay. Now, will that help? Will that help? I have no idea why I might be breaking up. I have,
do you have other people?
We were able to.
Do you have multiple people on your internet right now?
No, only two of you somewhere.
Okay.
Somewhere up in the heart of
still breaking up.
What we have. So look, I don't care whether I'm my picture's there or not. If this is better, then that's okay. But let me know if it really is better. Okay?
Yeah, it's
because otherwise
it seemed like
yeah.
It was just breaking up again. But
well, I just can't figure that out, you know, because apparently I have my I have my internet. It's okay. It looks, it's there. It looks like it's okay. So, you know, if it's going to be unhearable, then we're in trouble. But what about now? I'm talking to you now. Do you hear me? Or is it filled with sputters and other things?
It feels okay right now. Right on the edge.
It's, okay. It's a little bit better, but we can't see your screen right now.
Yeah, well, you will now, I hope. There you go. You should see that. Hope you can. And not this yet. Is the section.
Not yet.
Uh-huh. Oh, what was that? More, not more of this nonsense. That's this, and you should see the book coming up. You should see
there, now we've got it.
It takes a few seconds apparently, and I don't know why it just switched over to the other.
We just lost it again.
Yeah, I don't know why it's switching back. It should. Let's try once again. No, it just keeps bouncing back to the other.
Okay, we've got it again. This, and we lost it again.
Okay, let me try something. Now, okay, hold on. I don't know what we're going to do about this, but we're out in the woods, you know, so it seems should be stable at the moment. If you can hear me reasonably well without breaking up.
That's gotten a little bit better. We see your screen again. This is the three yellow passages, page 290. And we've got your video again. So.
Yeah, okay. It seems to went, oh, it just popped back. Now, what in the world can that mean?
Yeah,
I have.
It took a second, but we lost it too.
Michael, when you share your screen, don't share just an individual program. Share screen. Then it won't matter if it switches back and forth. But when it switches back and forth, is it letting? I'm going to pause this for a minute, okay?
For us, I'll start by saying that Taurus is the incentive for its experience in order to gain knowledge. Now think about that for a moment. So we have this drive towards the acquisition of knowledge when we work with Taurus. And that's why I sometimes think that the Tibetan's astrology is a blend of Gemini and Taurus. I feel he has a huge reservoir of knowledge, and at the same time, he is the messenger of the hierarchy. So, and when I look at his picture, you know, and that picture apparently does exist from 1928. He says he looks, his description is strange. He says, I look more like a high Chinese person with high cheekbones, and that fits very well. And then a young man from the North Carolina group, I don't know which one it was, but it was a long time ago, he painted that from that picture, a painted image of the Tibetan. The Tibetan was said to have said, "It's a pretty fair likeness, a pretty good likeness." And there, he just has the appearance of the broad nose that you find in Taurus. And of course, he is said to be actually quite tall, which gives the Gemini appearance. Okay, so anyway, the incentive towards, well, experience in order to gain knowledge, accumulation of knowledge, the drive to own, to acquire, to hold. Leo is the next aspect, the expression of experience in order to justify knowledge. We know Leo is an expressive sign, and what does it mean to justify knowledge? Think about that for a moment. And it's somehow, is it not, to prove to yourself that the knowledge accumulated is in fact accurate and useful and can be expressed in a way which serves the plan and which makes the consciousness grow. And then finally we get to Aquarius, the use of experience in order to make the gain knowledge a factor in service. You notice it is about service, okay? So this is considered to be an important triangle. What does it say up here? The will to illumine is that which drives all Leo people on to experiment. And so to gain knowledge, so there is the light factor coming in both Leo and Taurus as well. And even simply enough, if we include the sequence of meditations, Scorpio as well brings illumination, preceding inspiration of Sagittarius and initiation of Capricorn. So this is considered to be a significant and important zodiacal triangle as far as the fourth creative hierarchy goes. Now, why would that be? It's simply because most human beings end their growth into mastership in the sign Aquarius. And I guess as the age of Aquarius unfolds, we will see this mastership growing among a fair number of people, because as DK tells us, initiates of fifth degree are needed now in order to bring forward the divine plan. Okay, then we'll go on a little bit here. This triangle expresses the life of humanity and demonstrates finally the perfection or consummation of the human way. Another triangle is of somewhat similar nature, Leo, Virgo, and Pisces. but these three produce a still more subtle expression of consciousness. Now, why would that be? Let's think about them. Think about these three. We begin in Leo with the self-conscious man growing ever more self-conscious in terms of his personality. He starts out as a lower unity, and sometimes we might say that he only sees himself, and this can be a great drawback. But later, the Christ begins to be born, the mind that is in Christ begins to be born in his heart and mind, the latent Christ life or principle. And so we're going to have duality. And you may recognize, I think you do, that these two signs are exactly how we would look at the Sphinx, the head of a woman and the body of a lion. It's pretty much about the higher and Orion. That's one interpretation, and the other interpretation has to do with the values of the soul and that which is of the personality. But finally, we end up with the group conscious soul and the world savior and the complete unity which comes with identification. Okay. Now, not so many people tread that very arduous and difficult path. And maybe more of those on the second ray. Remember, there are seven academic possibilities for growth. And those upon the synthetic ray go into what is called that cosmic decanate in which Christ rules. Now, somewhere I've been taking up and will take up that Hercules rules the cosmic decanate of Scorpio, Pisces, the cosmic decanate that Christ rules, and Buddha, the cosmic decanate that Taurus, that is, that the Buddha rules. Three great spiritual heroes with emphasis basically on three different rays. Hercules is another triangle, of course, in terms of these great teachers and exemplars of man. Number one, first ray, Hercules, second ray, Christ, and the Buddha is one of those third ray monads, and it tells us that in a section about entities who can put in several appearances, independent appearances simultaneously. Okay, now, Michael, I'm going to make an effort to go back here without getting too stuck. Are you hearing me? Or am I?
We're hearing you, but there's still been an awful lot of breaking up in the middle of what you're saying. It's possible to understand most of what you're saying, though.
Well, that's something, okay? I don't know why this is, because my internet is as it always is. And if for some reason I've just got too much going on, then I have to get rid of it, don't I? Because it's just...
We're hoping that the recording might be okay, because at least one of the participants has said that you've sounded crystal clear the whole time. So,
okay.
Okay, we'll check the recording, and that may be okay.
If only I could think with crystal clarity. Okay, now. So now I'm going to look again at what a starling has given, and I hope that that is what you begin.
Yes, I believe we've just got it pulled up. It has significant to the fourth creative hierarchy and 13 Taurus Virgo Capricorn and 14 Taurus Scorpio Sag.
Okay, good. Thank you. Sometimes I wish I didn't live in the woods. Okay, now, what's the next one? Triangle we're going to be considering, and what page do we go to? Taurus, Virgo, Capricorn, and, or Capricorn, Virgo, Taurus. I don't know why that is in there. Actually, when you are looking at the egoic lotus, what I've figured out about it is that we always begin the first petal in a circle. There are three outer circles and one inner circle. We always begin the circle with a cardinal sign. We move to a fixed sign and then to a mutable sign. So in the egoic lotus, which is, I think, a very powerful reference point for anyone who wants to study the evolution of the human being, we begin with the school of hard knocks in Capricorn. Then we move to the possibility of some artistic impulse coming through in Taurus, and then we move to the situation which is still in the hall of ignorance, but it is a kind of enforced sacrifice. Now, you think about the armed services, the army, how it used to be anyway during a war. You were drafted, okay. You had no choice in the matter. You were compelled to serve in that way. That is what Virgo can mean in the hall of ignorance. It also means other things. It says it's a triangle of material expression, of profound interest. And let me repeat so that you can keep it firmly in mind. There are various ways to count petals of the egoic lotus. One way is to look at the outer tier as consisting of the three earth signs, the inner tier of the nine, by tier I mean a circle, consisting of the three water signs in that order of Cancer, Cardinal, Scorpio, Fixed, Pisces, mutable, and then fire signs coming up for the sacrifice petals. And in which case, we have Aries, Leo, and Sagittarius, one of the ways of representing the sacrifice petals. And the air signs are internal, and they are related to God. You know, in the air, you have God. If you study the formulas in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 1, you will find the statement, the air is God. And I suppose that means the Buddhic plane is of importance to divinity. Okay. So now, this is page 379 and 380. Let's see if there's anything there which is of interest to us. This is my hope that that we're going to see this. I hope we can see the book a little bit, but I seem to be having trouble showing the book. I don't know why.
We have the book, but we don't have the right page yet, and we just
the page the page I will get to us. Okay, so let's say page 379. Is that what I said earlier? I think so. Page 379. Yes. And did I say, and page 380. Okay. Right. So basically, you see this now, apparently. And basically, I am recording with this image up, hopefully. There are some interesting things, but, you know, we cannot take every interesting thing in esoteric astrology. The way to do that, of course, would be to have a course simply on esoteric astrology using the many programs that have been made in talking about esoteric astrology. Now we're just talking about the science of triangles. So, you know, to give myself a sense of anchorage, I'm going to, now, do you see the yellow?
Yes, we do.
Okay. So this is what we have just been talking about as we consider Capricorn, Virgo, Taurus. Now, maybe we have to wonder why he puts it in that order. The earthly triplicity of Capricorn, Virgo, and Taurus form a triangle of material expression, which is of profound interest as one studies it, either from the angle of the ordinary round of the zodiac, followed by average and undeveloped humanity, or from the angle of the disciple, where the path of zodiacal progress is reversed and actually goes in a counterclockwise direction. We might say, in the order that is given here, we have the difficulties of the physical plane in Capricorn, we have the beginning of the Christ consciousness in Virgo, and we have illumination such as is found at the Waysak festival in Taurus. But you know, I look at this in various ways. You know that I'm looking at this from the perspective of the egoic lotus, but maybe Master DK is saying something different. So, and he's not thinking in those terms particularly. Let's just say that as the Christ principle is born out of and away from the very great difficulties that Capricorn can present at first, it will lead to a great kind of shambolic illumination. So the idea that I see the greatest light is kind of climactic, and it has to do with Taurus. And when the entire hierarchy gathers at the Waysak Festival, at least for the time being, until the mode of operation is changed, Taurus represents that greatest light. Greatest light. Okay. Now, let's see what he says here about this. Because, as I say, Starling just gives us the hint, like, this is the triangle, and these are the pages on which it is discussed. So we have to go to those pages and see what we learn through DK's discussion. In the first case, he says, DK says, Capricorn marks, the point of greatest density. See, that's it. That's why it's coming first. And concrete expression, and shows the life divine as deeply embedded in substance. Now, that even makes sense in terms of the egoic lotus. That first petal takes a long, long time to open. Although DK has said that all human units have that petal open now, or apparently nearly completely open. I believe it takes millions of years to unfold petal number one in the egoic lotus. Now, you know, there is an acceleration going on all the time, so that the last petals that spring open in the outer circle of nine can even reach their fullness together in one life. Now compare that with the millions of years that characterize our experience in the hall of ignorance. So this deep density in the hall of ignorance is not something that we students, as we are, of Master DK, are any longer subject to. We have, you know, moved beyond that. And as a matter of fact, if we are a true disciple or true aspirant, we have taken the first initiation, which means that even the fifth petal is completely unfolded. And that fifth petal has a lot to do with Leo, Scorpio. Okay. So Capricorn, inauguration, density. Now, at the same time, we also know that Capricorn rules the first five initiations, and that when it is achieved, we do have the true initiate, who is a member of the ashram. And even, let us say, it takes us beyond that as well. If it rules the first five initiations. Now, we're used to the birth of the Christ. We're used to Christmas. We're used to the winter solstice in the north, the December solstice, as we celebrate Capricorn. But it has other meanings, lesser and greater, along the way. Okay, now about Capricorn and its initial placement, at least in this type of triangle, this is the true state of death as far as life is concerned. So basically, the deep physicality of Capricorn is what comes out. Identification, we could almost say, with the animal kingdom. After all, Jesus was born in a manger, surrounded by the animals, and that is telling us something about animal consciousness and human consciousness. So this is, I'll just kind of, as far as life is concerned. Now, what is life? Well, you know, sometimes he says you better not ask because nobody has any idea. But to me, it's always true being. That's what life is, and it reflects itself atmically and reflects itself in terms of vitality. Now, we seem to be going on from Capricorn. It is, actually, that's part of the one we just were looking at. It is captivity in form. It's prison. It's a prison of what the man, or for what the man, the human being, really is as a soul. But now progress, right? In Virgo, however, that life makes its inner pressure felt, and the movement, faint yet real, of the hidden life begins to pulsate within the concrete form, within the concrete form. Okay, so the pulsation of life, it's a Christ-like pulsation. It has to do with the birth of the soul consciousness, producing in Taurus that reaction to desire and that onward rush and powerful movement which distinguishes the evolutionary progress of the individual working under the impulse of desire. We sometimes forget how fast the bull can run when it is incentivized under the spell of desire and moving towards the achievement of that desire. So I'm going to, I want to distinguish these a little bit. It's not perfect by any means, but okay. It is something. Producing in Taurus that reaction to desire, that onward rush under the impulse of desire. I guess with Taurus, you have to ask yourself what it is you deeply desire. And then what are you moving towards? What are you accumulating? What type of desire are you serving? The highest form, I'm going to repeat this sentence, the highest form of aspirational idealism is found in Taurus. Now that might be a strange thought to us, but he does say exactly that. Now we'll go on a little bit more here. Forget not that the first thrill or response of the Christ life is to the pull, urge, or suggestion of the form nature in which it finds itself. Now that would be how Virgo responds at first. Okay. Then, later, when all the resources, yeah, this is so interesting. You have to kind of sound the depths of the eventual emptiness of the personality nature. Now, maybe many of us, we still have these personality desires, and we're not dealing yet with the highest form of aspirational idealism. It's for every student to judge. So then later, when all the resources of the form nature drawn out through desire are exhausted, note this, and the Christ life is exceedingly strong and ready to reveal itself through the death of the mother, that is the personality aspect, the form then, and not till then, is the progress of the wheel arrested, and revolution takes place with the life aspect reversing itself upon the wheel. Now, what, you know, we're dealing with three earth signs, which he says are of profound importance, and we have found that there are different ways to think about them. The reversal of the wheel is actually the reversal of the energy currents in your body, in your ethers and in your body, such that there is an upward drawing of that which lies below, where in the early days there is a passing over of that which is above and simply an anchoring of the vitality in that which lies below. So then the disciple, an expression of the Christ life in the early manifested stages. He's not yet coming to Shambhala as a world savior. Having transmuted desire into aspiration, begins his career objectively and in full consciousness. In the sign Taurus, and on the wings of aspiration, proceeds towards Virgo, being both the mother and the child, enters into the house of labor. Then the disciple, an expression of the Christ life in its early manifested stages, having transmuted desire into aspiration, as can be done in Taurus, begins his career objectively and in full consciousness in the sign Taurus and on the wings of aspiration, proceeds towards Virgo. There seems to be kind of a leapfrogging going on here. Does Taurus end this sequence of three because it has so much to do with Shambhala and with the Wesak festival, or is it Virgo? Well, it looks to me like there is an aspiration towards Virgo and a continuing higher aspiration towards the great gathering of the hierarchy in the eyes of Shambhala. Okay. I'm just distinguishing these different sections because, you know, the color is not exactly correct, nor can it be. From the house of labor, from that house, the disciple in due time arrives at Capricorn. Remember where he began. So what we have here is signs of the zodiac forming various triangles, coming in at different levels of sensitivity, different levels of spirituality. From a certain point of view, Capricorn can be so dense that the ordinary attempt of the soul to reach into the personality is not successful. Later, Capricorn can be a sign of great sensitivity, the kind that is needed if you're going to take initiation. So, from that house of labor, now, labor tells us it's difficult to bring birth to the Christ child. And there are other states that it is even more difficult to bring birth to. But from another point of view, Christ does rule entrance at the fifth initiation into Shambhala. So we have to think of all the different placements where we can find Virgo. It's in the gestation period, it's at the birth in the manger, it has to do with the son of mind or the soul taking over, because Virgo does represent that. And in general, with the birth of the Christ, not the cosmic Christ necessarily, which is ruled by Aries. So, you know, we might have a triangle. I'm just kind of thinking of what it might be. It might go like this: Leo, Virgo, Aries. And what would that mean? From the self-conscious individual to the growing Christ in Virgo to the cosmic Christ in Aries. So all of this is very intricate, and I guess charts should be made to help us go through it. So from that house of labor, and to birth even the individual Christ is a huge labor, as I think many of us have discovered sometimes the hard way. The disciple in due time arrives in Capricorn, where, and this is interesting because in the beginning, he is complete slave of matter, but now comes initiation, and he arrives at Capricorn, where he finally subdues matter through the initiatory process. He subdues matter, form, or concrete expression to divine uses and purposes, and thus demonstrates the triumph and the potency of the Christ life. Now, that's another way that we can look at this from the density of Capricorn. Gosh, there's different ways. The density of Capricorn through the illumination and gathering of necessary substances, all the way to the triumph of the Christ's life. Or we could do it this way. We could look at Capricorn, Virgo, or Taurus, Virgo, and finally Capricorn again. So what's important? What a question. But it's important that we begin to realize at how many different levels these signs of the zodiac can manifest, and how they form different triangles depending upon the levels at which they manifest. Let's see if there's... Well, you know, I kind of want to stick... Well, what a book this is. He said it was his most occult book, even more occult than Cosmic Fire, because it dealt purely with energy. So, you know, compared to the Tibetan's accumulations of knowledge and his ability to convey that knowledge through Gemini, we're probably honestly at, you know, the 2 or 3% level. Always more and more shocked about what we don't really know. Okay, now, without destroying or disturbing anything, fancy that, I want to that's not it. Sorry. That's not the one. What is the one? This one. Okay. Let's see if there's anything else we want to look at. We have another triangle. I mean, you know, it could be fascinating going through these different triangles, but what's important is the triangle that is operative for you. Now, if you go to page 169 or 170 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, you're going to see different human triangles. Well, you know that you are operative principally in one of those triangles. It may be a triangle in which four centers and the Ajna center are involved, or Alta Major. It may be a triangle in which all seven head centers are involved. It's not going to be a low triangle, because already through your studies of these books, you have proven, you know, that you are moving rapidly into the fifth kingdom of nature. But it's kind of worth going there, page 169, 170, something like that, and looking at the human triangles which condition people at different levels of consciousness. Now, if I were to take one more, we see that a triangle can be created because the three members are ruled by the same planet. A triangle can be created because the three members of the triangle are ruled by the same ray. And this is the case in the one we're looking at, Esoteric Astrology, page 423. And if you know your table of astrology and the rays, you will immediately see that the signs of the zodiac conveying the fourth ray are these, with Scorpio at this time being the maximum transmitter of the fourth ray, Taurus perhaps being at the moment the least, though the artistic impulses of Taurus, you know, Leonardo was a Taurus with Sagittarius rising. Look, he had two of the fourth ray signs, and DK comments about him particularly. And then there is finally Sagittarius, where experience is sought, the exploration of what it means to be a member of the human race, to, you know, go places anthropologically and to study the people in far distant societies. Well, you can imagine that in the earlier days, those societies and locales seemed much more distant. Now you pretty well just have to hop on an airplane and you're there before you know it. So in a way, Sagittarius has turned into Gemini. Now, if I follow this to page 423, and hopefully I can do that. I'm not at the right page yet, but I will be. Okay, well, here we are. Mm-hmm. 422 and 423. Okay. So let's see what 423 looks like. Well, it's just our table of interrelated triangles. Now, I hate to say it, friends, but if you want to know the science of triangles, and if you want to advance in your understanding of esoteric astrology, this is a table that you have to have memorized. There are there are simply certain things that just have to be memorized, and obviously the 12 signs of the zodiac and the 10 planets, and sometimes more, and the creative hierarchies and where they locate themselves. These are factors to have stably anchored in your consciousness. Now, I'm not sure what this is saying here. The seven rishis of the Great Bear express themselves through the medium of seven planetary logoi. Well, probably more than that. It depends on how they are expressing themselves, whether monadically or in terms of the soul, or, well, it wouldn't be in terms of the personality. Who the seven planetary logoi, who are their representatives, and to whom they stand in the relation of cosmic prototype. Well, what the planets will become is already illustrated in the sky with the seven major stars of the Great Bear. The seven planetary gods manifest through the medium of seven sacred planets. So maybe that's how he's operating, and he's not considering Earth, Pluto, and Mars, but only the sacred planets. Each of these seven rays is transmitted into our solar system through the medium of three constellations and their ruling planets. So, if we go down to that fourth ray grouping, we have, as we saw, Taurus, Scorpio, and Sagittarius. But, and this is not the only map, carrying the fourth ray in some manner will be the esoteric rulers and orthodox rulers of these three signs. And there's an even more complete chart which would show us Vulcan, hierarchical, Mercury, Scorpio, and Mars again, hierarchical for Sagittarius. Anyway, when we look at this, what can we think? and we can think. Taurus represents deep desire. Scorpio, the sacrifices that lead to the release of low desire and eventually to illumination, because after all, Scorpio does rule illumination on the wheel of meditations. And then finally, Sagittarius. Sagittarius bringing in inspiration. So all of these other planets, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Vulcan, Mars, the Earth, and though not written here, Vulcan, Mercury, and Mars, all of them carry some expression of the fourth ray. Even though the fourth ray planets, per se, are Vulcan monadically, I think, and Mercury in terms of the soul, and the moon as a veil, an aspect of personality veiling what's really going on beneath it. The moon is considered to be a substitute for the fourth ray, but it also has connected with it the third ray and the seventh ray. So, okay, friends, I don't blame you for thinking that this is really an intricate business. And you can only imagine that Master DK probably studied it for 3,000 years or, well, more than that, really. From the time of Pythagoras and probably earlier than that. So what are our chances of accumulating the knowledge that we need to make all of this make sense? And I would say, yes, we do have a chance to do this. So, okay. This is then, let's see, let me know how I'm doing. This is as far as I want to carry it today. And then, well, one triangle after another is coming up. The point is, we have to learn how to think in terms of triangles, triangles of rotation, in which each, during each cycle, a different one of the three holds the major position. Now that gets quite interesting, because it's often the lesser factor among the three that holds the major position at first, then the middling factor, and finally the most advanced factor that holds that position. If I can, I guess I've been overly tempted, and I would say if I go here to a treatise on cosmic fire, and I say, let's go to page 170, And there you have what I'm talking about. These are the human triangles all the way from...
We don't see them yet. We're still seeing Starling's document.
Okay. I'm going to try to make it so you see it. And it should be coming up shortly. You know, it's...
Yes, we've got it now. Thank you.
You got it now. So, you know, we are not centered in the pranic triangle, the highest aspect of which is the center in the shoulder blades, and the other two being lower. We're not centered on the astral plane, man controlled from the astral plane, though many millions and probably billions of people are, in which case the heart is the major center. The solar plexus less, and the base of the spine, it's interesting to find it there. It's in one of its earlier functions. Are we man-controlled from the mental plane? Well, in a way, yes. But in a way, we're moving beyond strictly mental control. And it looks like, I don't think we can say that the base of the spine is the major factor. Maybe even for the one above it, the solar plexus is the major factor, with heart being secondary and the base of the spine found in all of these. And here we have a man, I would say, if he's controlled from the mental plane, it's the throat that is primary, with the heart again offering the middling position and the base of the spine, the supportive position. Now, these can rotate, you see. These are triangles in revolution. And as we evolve, they do rotate. And different ones of them might be considered primary at different times. It would be an interesting subject, but I'm not sure how much he has written about it. Now, when we're talking about advanced man here, looks like the head might be the primary factor, the heart next, and then the throat. Or maybe it's head, throat, heart. But anyway, the centers in the head are beginning to awaken. Now, a lot of us are man, partially controlled by the ego. And that's one of the definitions of advanced man. And then, something more than advanced, the spiritual man to the third initiation. It looks like eventually the seven head centers will dominate, and the throat will follow, and the heart as sort of the basis. Sometimes heart seems to be in a middling position, and sometimes a foundational position. And now, the last one we're given takes us pretty much from the third initiation to the fifth initiation, with the two many-petaled lotuses being the most advanced. The seven head centers, I suppose, within the head, or maybe as part of the Agena series, I'm not sure, operating as the middling position and therefore dominating at a certain point, and the heart again being foundational. So these are things that we want to read about and try to understand. What's going on with us? Are we man partially controlled by the ego, or are we a spiritual man, which is entirely controlled by the centers in the head? Well, I would say, if you judge from the students that were attracted around Master DK, some were accepted disciples, some were not. The majority had not taken the second initiation, so they were partially controlled by the ego, and they were not yet third degree initiates. Maybe Alice Bailey and Roberto Saggioli, those two, for sure, in my view, were third degree initiates moving towards the fourth degree. Okay, so that's something for you to study. And let's just say about study, I guess we all have our favorite. Meditation comes in on the first ray, study on the second, and service as the third law of the soul comes in on the third ray. This is all generic. There are many different ways to serve on all the different rays. But I'm saying in that triangle of meditation, study, and service, we have a 1-2-3 situation. Okay. Well, that should be quite enough. And let's see if you have anything you want to ask or something you want to say. I guess it would be in the chat area, but maybe Biela, are you handling this?
Yes. Maria Christina says, might you comment on the too many petaled lotuses? I had just been considering these.
What the, excuse me, what it says here as the too many petaled lotuses. Okay. That has to do with the thousand petaled lotus and also with the Ajna Center, which from a certain point of view has 96 petals, something of that nature. The number 96 or 960 are very important, and you can divide them in different ways. But the head center has the so-called thousand petals. It's not really totally a thousand. It's more like 960 or 972. And with regard to the Ajna Center, we have kind of a 48 and 48. We have that number 96 as well. I guess the question arises, how many petals does the Alta Major Center have? But it seems not to be included in this enumeration. There are unsuspected functions of the centers about which we usually think in a certain way. We think about the centers in a certain rather confined way, but they have some functions which are very high. And I'm thinking about how the throat connects to the spiritual triad, which somewhere I read it actually does. So we have to begin to search out the higher functions of the centers. And we have that book, it's on Laya Yoga. It's an Indian system, okay, and maybe a little different from what the Tibetan is presenting, but it certainly shows different types of chakras and functions than we have normally considered. It shows us, I think I've said this, that when the Tibetans wear that kind of feathered hat, which looks like an arch, it's actually a depiction of a whole series of chakras and advanced chakras, which are symbolized by this kind of semicircle. And then you have, of course, the thousand-petaled lotus as a whole, however many petals it really has. And you have as well master head centers within the head. So there are a number of series of these grouped centers, and when DK was asked a question about the head center, he said, well, look, it's a very occult issue here. We're not saying too much about it. And of course, it was an initiate disciple who actually asked him the question. So he's basically telling us that the sort of explication of the groupings of head centers is left for another time. And, you know, there's just so much we're not going to fathom. We're just not going to, not now. But eventually, that's the word he likes to use, we will. Okay.
She says thank you, and that's the only other thing I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, okay. You know, you have to ask yourself how you'll handle this. It is, you know, we're into deep waters here. We, all right, coming up should be our original. And let's see, maybe we can, we've gone this far, right? Taurus, Scorpio, and Sagittarius. So what I'll do is kind of, you know, this is like an inchworm just proceeding by inches, by millimeters, okay. But this is the end of program 105. And on the 17th, and we'll start next time with program 106. And do we have a time for it at all, BL?
It looks to me like, if I'm reading Tuvia's calendar correctly, that it will be on the 1st of December.
Okay. Well, we'll all discover each other somehow. And I'm not going to call it anything of that nature. I'm just going to say program 106, and is it an evening program? Is that the idea? Is it...
Yes, 6 p.m. GMT.
Okay. Good. Okay. And let's see if I can get rid of some of my Finnish Swedish characters there. That's Finnish, and maybe I can. That's better. Okay, and that always means that when we're off summertime, like we are now, we go ahead 2 hours and not three. For quite a while, for some months, on summertime, we have been going ahead for three hours. Okay. This is the place right there. Okay. So I guess the next thing we will take up... See, look, DK is saying a lot of things. But when you look at a triangle, whether it's planetary or zodiacal or a mixture of the two, or whether it's a mixture of the great constellations, the signs of the zodiac, and a planet, let's say, what do they mean to you? What are the ideas which arise in your consciousness as you look at these presented triangles? Because we can learn all of this academically, but can we work with it? Now, of course, the way we do work with triangles, let's say, is the sun, the rising sign, sun and moon of our chart. That's one way we work. Or the sun, the point opposite the sun, and the rising sign. Or perhaps something interesting, the point opposite the rising sign. Let's even start with the rising sign, the point opposite, and then the point opposite the sun sign. Now, all of these have to begin to make sense to you as you live your life. You have to be able to stand back and say, this is the energy which at present is operative for me. This energy is coming in now. I feel it. I sense it. I register it. I'm certain of it. And that's no easy task. to do that. Oftentimes we just go along and are not particularly spiritually sensitive, telepathically sensitive to what is being transmitted to us. You might even pause right now and you might ask yourself, well, we've had a program where we're looking at the science of triangles. What kind of energies have been activated in your consciousness, let's say, of which you can be certain? Anything? Anything of importance? Anything that pointed to a triangular configuration within your energy system? So we have to, in a way, work the system. Our academic knowledge is one thing, and working with that academic knowledge is another. And I think Master DK is a perfect example of an exemplar who does both. Okay. Okay, well, if that's it, that's it. And
that's all I see.
Okay. Thank you. So thank you, BL and Michael and everybody else who has been here. Sometimes we have to stretch ourselves. Now, that's what's happening when we study subjects of this nature. Compared to our normal thoughts, it is a stretch. And stretching, at first, can be a little uncomfortable, even as we know from normal exercise. So try to be continuous in your will to stretch your present state of consciousness into something that potentially will give many more interesting and useful impressions, which will serve the three great lords in hierarchy and the purpose of Shambhala and the divine plan in general. Okay, well, what I'm going to do, I'm going to close this down. I have to talk to Michael Crow for a short time, so he'll probably put you in a waiting room or something as you move along. And just want to thank you, Tuya and I, and all of the communications group, BL and Joe and Harold and Michael and Michael Stacy and Frederick's been helping us, and a lot of people have been chipping in and really giving us a hand, and more will come as we approach our conference in April, May of 2022. My, how the time does pass. Okay. So I'm going to stop the recording, and I'll hang in here, and Michael will put you where you need to be, and he and I will continue for just a little while. So here goes the stop.